Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 13, 2016. An identified armed youth and South Sudan Army fight in Kejikeji over the weekend.
When there's fighting, normally people fear to be in that particular location. So, of course, the fear makes people to not be displaced more. That fear needs to be removed. That is the most important thing. Of course, it has happened. We need to heal the wound.
And a top UN official says the leaders of the two warring parties are not committed to end violence in the country.
There are ceasefire violations in several parts of the country. That tensions remain high in the region of Malakal. You know, we know that it's not easy.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Local leaders in Kejukeji County of Yei River State say more than 1,000 people have been displaced from three villages following Friday's clashes between the SPLA and an armed youth group. The Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan says the majority of the displaced are children separated from their parents who are now sheltering in schools and churches. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
They needed actually shelter for them, then food and medication, because some of them will be staying all the night without being covered, experiencing headache. Even others are diarrheatic.
That is Sokiri Henry John, the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Coordinator for Kejikeji County. He says a local church is helping some of the IDPs in Lewolo village. Sokiri says his office is not able to reach IDPs in villages because many families are still hiding in the bush.
At the moment, I don't have the exact number, but it's above 1,000 now. They are not concentrated in one place. They are actually in different places. And as up to now, we have not got any report on how they are sustained.
He says local churches have stepped up efforts to help the displaced, especially the children and mothers, taking shelter in the church compounds in Wudu village and Kajukeji town. But he says the support being provided by church leaders will not take more than a day or two, given the continued influx of displaced persons every hour. Sokiri says local leaders are coordinating with the main relief and rehabilitation office in Juba for more supports for the displaced. The speaker of the Kejikeji County Legislative Council says Bori and Lewolo villages of Kejikeji are the areas that received many of the displaced by the last weekend's violence. Patrick Walian says he doesn't understand why the army would clash with armed youth forces affiliated to SPLA-IO at a time when Transitional Government of National Unity is implementing the peace agreement. He says the situation is calm now, but residents still live in fear.
There's no problem in the ground at the moment. Only that people have got fear. They fear. Because when there's fighting, normally people fear to be in that particular location. So, of course, the fear makes people to not be displaced more. That fear needs to be removed. That is the most important thing. Of course, it has happened. We need to heal the wounds and we need to see how we can reset these people to where to their original families.
Walian says they have formed a committee to mobilize some resources from the local communities to help rescue the displaced mothers and children. He says it is not clear what led to the fighting between the armed youth and the army.
We are tired of war and we don't need another war. People should respect the peace agreement.
The total number of casualties is not clear. Unconfirmed reports say 20 government soldiers were killed in the weekend clashes. Friday's fighting is the deadliest clashes in the region after the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
A top UN official says the Transitional Government of National Unity should quickly implement the peace deal in order to improve lives of ordinary citizens. The UN Undersecretary General for Department of Peacekeeping Operations, Javier Lesus, spoke to reporters in Juba today as he wrapped up a three-day visit to South Sudan to assess the conditions on the ground following the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Latsius says citizens are still not feeling the dividends of the peace agreement signed by the warring parties last August. He says the presence of the internally displaced persons or IDPs in various camps around the country is a clear sign that the transitional government should be moving more quickly to implement the terms of the peace deal.
When you look at South Sudan, one is struck by the fact that it has what not every country has, you know. It has fertile land on a very large scale. It has huge amounts of water and sunshine, so the agricultural, the agro-pastoral potential is huge. And then there is oil. So I think in the long term, there are reasons for optimism. But the first thing, of course, is to create again stability that is conducive to resumption of more normal economic activity.
Latsius traveled to Bentiu and Malakal. He also met with President Salva Kiir, First Vice President Riek Machar, and other government officials. He says forming the transitional government of national unity in April opened a new chapter in South Sudanese affairs and the country's relations with the United Nations. But he says the government must prioritize stabilization of the economy and the restoration of peace and stability should take precedence before anything else.
We want to see the country moving ahead, addressing all those critical problems that it has been facing, so that as quickly as possible, through rapid implementation of the decisions that were already taken, people get a sense that the peace agreement is providing them with peace dividends.
Latsius says he is deeply concerned that ceasefire arrangements are still being violated across many parts in the country.
There are ceasefire violations in several parts of the country, that tensions remain high. In the region of Malakal, you know, we know that it's not easy. So I think this has to be addressed in every way possible.
But Latsius welcomed the return of stability to some areas like in Bentiu, where he says some 25,000 IDPs who had been sheltering in a UN camp have returned to their homes over the last 4 months. He says the United Nations will continue to monitor human rights abuses and reiterated the UN's unwavering support for the ceasefire transitional monitoring mechanism, the body charged with the monitoring full implementation of the ceasefire arrangements across the country. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The rebel Sudan People's Liberation Movement, NOPM, is denying accusations made by the Sudan government that the group is recruiting some 900 children from southern Kordofan state, where rebels have been fighting government troops since June 2011. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Arabic media reports quote the Secretary General of the Sudanese National Council for Children as saying that the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, North, forces children in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile to join SPLM North. But the U.S. representative of the rebel SPLM North strongly denies those accusations, saying the rebel group has never recruited children. Philip Tutu says the SPLM North welcomes any international organization or agency to come and investigate the charges.
They welcome anybody, any agency, to come in to see for themselves if there is any children in SPLM soldiers. There is no children there, but we protect the kids and we try to give them education as we can. They're welcome to come. This is just government lie.
Tutu says most of the SPLM North fighters are volunteers.
Nobody recruited by force. They all joined voluntarily to protect themselves from the government. The youngest fighter, different ages, but anybody is over 18, but I cannot tell you how is the old young or the youngest or the oldest. I can't really tell you, because the one I know, I can tell you, there is no underage fighters.
The Sudan People's Liberation Movement North has reported that Sudanese government forces have recruited more than 3,000 underage children in southern Kordofan and that the children have been transferred to military camps to be trained to join the government's rapid response forces. The government has repeatedly denied the accusations about recruiting child soldiers. The SPLM North and government forces have been fighting each other for 5 years in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile. The government has been encouraging all rebel groups, including the SPLM North, to take part in its national dialogue to end the war in Blue Nile, southern Kordofan, and Darfur. Representatives of the SPLM North have so far refused to take part in the talks, saying the government of Sudan is not serious about real political reforms. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
VOA fellow Nadia Taha prepared that report in Washington. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new health center opens exclusively for students in WOW. That story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could invent one thing to save the world, what would it be?
Saving the world. Maybe medication. If I can get a way how I can help people, I can help them with, like, cancer medicine, because it is a problem in Uganda and the world.
I would invent something that could prevent people from dying. I'm just putting myself in the shoes of someone losing a very loved one. I think it's been really pathetic. That's what I would love to do.
I think I would invent a machine, a brain machine actually, that once you put it on, they eliminate all kinds of evil stuff in our head, evil thoughts, evil minds, that will make us only think about the good stuff.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A local non-governmental organization is training women in different vocational skills to help families earn a living and create other jobs. Some of the women attending the training say the new skills will help families start up business and become independent. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rakaringe reports from Juba.
37-year-old Teresa Yortor uses a sewing machine to make clothes she can sell in the market. Speaking in Arabic, Thor claims her husband, who is a military man, is not helping or providing for their 7 children.
I have challenges in life. My children are grown up and are supposed to be in school, but they cannot because they don't have anyone to pay the fees. Because I'm not working. That is why I came to this tailoring training, so I can be able to help my family.
She alleges her husband has been battering her whenever she asks for anything, and even injured her left leg. Thor says now that she has learned tailoring skills, she hopes to acquire a sewing machine and start her own business.
This training is going to help me a lot, as well as my children, because they are now grown-ups. I hope I can be able to earn some money and take care of myself and my family. This training is going to have a positive impact on my life because it will help reduce conflicts in my family, for I won't bother my husband to provide for me. I will be earning my own money.
Another woman, 29-year-old Rebecca Deng, faces similar challenges. She used to work for many long hours in Juba's scorching sunshine, moving place to place as a house broker. Now that she has a certificate in catering, Rebecca says she will make cake and sell them in the market to earn money.
If somebody advised me to go and make for him, for her, for birthday or whatever, I can do. If I get a job in office, I can work. When I come back, I can do my business at home and evening.
Susan Pascare is the executive director for the Women's Advancement Organization, the NGO that sponsored the training. She says for 2 years, her organization has trained about 700 women so far in different vocational skills, such as tailoring, weaving, bricklaying, and catering.
The woman will not also see their children coming home and then they become aggressive. It's like, you know, because they don't have anything to give them. The father will not come home and say, and find the wife is still waiting for him to come and bring for him something. Already she has something at hand. She cannot let her children die, and she will buy something and come and give her husband too, not to depend on him.
Thelma Majela, manager for the Life Skills and Peace Building Program at UNICEF in South Sudan, says women are realizing they too can earn a living.
The assumption is that women are able to now go out and do, you know, projects that can, you know, generate income for the family, and therefore they become, you know, productively engaged. They become productive members of the society. They're able to help their children. They're able to help their husbands. They're able to become, you know, active in the family.
According to the World Bank, 84% of South Sudanese women can neither read or write. Only a tiny fraction of South Sudanese women are employed in both private and public sectors. But the Minister of Culture, Youth and Sports says women with skills such as tailoring can play an important role in rebuilding the nation. Nadia Arop Dudi says the training will have multiple results on families.
The women, they have a very big role in the country, and I want to assure you that those who get now this training, they will benefit and for themselves, and also they will be a trainers for other people where they are living, and the others will benefit from them.
South Sudan's August Peace Agreement provides for the establishment of a youth and women entrepreneurship fund to help finance women and youth projects. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
The International Labour Organization is spearheading a global campaign to stamp out child labour, which victimizes 160 million children in places like all over the world and places like South Sudan. To mark this year's World Day Against Child Labour, a panel of experts focused on the abusive and widespread practice of child labour in international supply chains. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ILO headquarters in Geneva.
The choir for the abolition of child labor, a group of young musicians from Ivory Coast, spreads its message that children belong in school, not at work. The pulsing beat of the music and the rap lyrics set the right note for the high-level panel discussion on ending child labor in supply chains. Under the system, children are employed all along the line, from the manufacture of a product to its final distribution to the consumer. It involves workers, small producers, and enterprises around the world. Most child labor occurs in production for domestic markets, but children also produce goods and services for export. It mainly occurs in the rural and informal economy. Director General of the International Labor Organization, Guy Ryder, says the combined efforts of governments, employers, workers' unions, and consumers are needed to end this nefarious practice. He says enterprises need to be vigilant to ensure their supply chains are free of child labor.
From enterprises, we need a clear message of zero tolerance of child labor. They need to know what is happening in their supply chains and to back that up with action in their business practices and dealings with suppliers. And this, I believe, is the common expectation of business in the 21st century.
Children work for low or no pay in abusive, slave-like and dangerous conditions in agriculture, fishing, garment industries, electronics, manufacturing, and in the mineral extractive sector. Jacqueline Mugo is executive director of the Federation of Kenya Employers. She says employers worldwide are tackling the problem of child labor. In some cases, she says, employers will not hire children if the work is seen to cause hardships to the children or their families.
Because in East Africa, we found that actually child labor was in many cases exacerbated by families that needed their income. And so it's important to take this into consideration, and there are programs that have been implemented to do this.
But Philip Jennings, General Secretary of Uni Global Union, a worldwide workers' movement, says not enough is being done.
It was Timothy Leary that said, tune in, turn on, and drop out. There are 168 million reasons why we, as a community, cannot drop the ball and drop out of the conversation on child labor.
Jennings agrees progress is being made. He notes child labor has been cut by one-third in the last decade, and governments have committed themselves to eliminating child labor by 2025.
The clock is running. The time for excuses from business is over, and we simply don't buy the argument that it's all the fault of government. We want business to accept its responsibility and to work with the social partners and local governments to ensure that child labour isn't a reality.
Andrew Tago heads a program of rural and agricultural workers in Ghana. He describes the community program, which intimately involves the inhabitants of Tokor, a small fishing village in Upper Volta, in tackling the problem of child labour.
That is what we have called the Tokor model, that is bringing people on board to address their own child labor, to address their own deficit gaps in terms of decent work, so that community people in the village can sit with government and negotiate with government structures what they think they need as community people.
The panelists agree a key element in eradicating child labor is to provide decent jobs to adults and youth of working age. Some of the participants are calling on the ILO to enact a convention on supply chains that spells out the rules for ending child labor in this complex global system. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Health officials in Wau, together with the International Medical Corps, opened a new health facility center last week for students who will have access for free medical treatment. Health officials say the facility will help reduce delays at students' ordinary fees in public hospitals. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau.
Henry Gabriel Sasa, director of primary health care in Wau, says the facility was long overdue. Most diseases are likely to come as the rainy season heightens. And Sasa says the new facility will prevent school-age children missing schools because they come down with malaria or some other diseases.
We have a lot of schools around here, and most of them, when they go to the hospital, they spend maybe 3 hours in the hospital waiting for consultation or to meet a doctor. So they take a lot of time, maybe the whole day, and then they may not be able to get services time. So we thought of opening this health facility, especially for the school pupils and students.
The health facility will provide basic medicines for primary and secondary school children for free. Medical staffs will also admit students for short stays. It has 4 beds. Students in Wau say the facility will help them overcome some of the challenges they would encounter while seeking medication. For one thing, many families in Wau could not afford the medicine in private health facilities and would seek low-cost treatment at the few government health centers instead. 17-year-old Belkish Hawat is in Umbili Senior 2. Is speaking in Arabic, she says when students go to the government hospital, they could not wait in the long queue.
When we go to the hospital, we face a lot of difficulties because of the distance involved, and we often miss lessons. There at the hospital, we could wait for a long time to meet the doctor, and sometimes in the laboratory, they will not test disease like typhoid. They only test for malaria. When we go to the pharmacy, they will say there are no medicines. As we get back to school, we find that the lessons are over.
16-year-old Judith Stephen Musha says nurses have been blaming students for dodging classes, claiming they are sick. Speaking in Arabic, she thanked the health officials for considering the health demand of students by establishing an exclusive facility.
As a student, when we feel sick, we usually take sick leave from school. But when we reach the hospital, nurses will say, look, these students have come. They are just avoiding classes and want to create more congestion for us here.
The school health facility will test and diagnose simple medications for diseases like malaria, diarrhea, typhoid, and other first aid treatment for students and teachers. In addition to prescribing medicine, medical practitioners will provide information on how to prevent contracting diseases like HIV and AIDS.
primary health care activities, which include consultations of the patients. While consulting, of course, we also have a laboratory in which we do basic tests like malaria tests, hemoglobin, urine general, stool general. Those are the basic tests in which we can be able to diagnose most of the common diseases. But otherwise, if it's beyond the capacity of the center, usually they refer to the Wau Teaching Hospital.
Gabriel says since June marks the beginning of heavy rains in Wau, he expects an increased rate of malaria infections. The new facility will cut down on the long wait for diagnosis and treatment of such diseases for students and teachers. Malnutrition cases have also been on the rise in recent months and have overwhelmed most health facilities in Wau. Some children have already been admitted for therapeutic feeding, while others still languish at home without medical attention. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we have a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Local leaders in Ye River State's Kejukeji County say more than 1,000 people have been displaced from three bomas following Friday's clashes between the SPLA and armed youth groups. They say most of the displaced are children separated from their parents, and they are sheltering in schools and churches. So Kiri Henry John, South Sudan's relief and rehabilitation coordinator for Kejukeji County, says their immediate needs are food, shelter, and medication. He says South Sudan's Episcopal Church is helping some of the IDPs, but in areas like Gaderu, IDPs are not able to be reached because many families are still hiding in the bush. So Kerry says the support being provided by church leaders will not last more than a day or two, given the continued influx of more displaced persons each hour. A top UN official says the transitional government of national unity must move more quickly to implement the peace deal to help South Sudanese citizens still suffering from the conflict. UN Undersecretary General for the Department of Peacekeeping Operations, Erb Ladzous, just wrapped up a three-day visit to South Sudan to assess conditions after the transitional government was formed. He says citizens are still not feeling the dividends of the August peace agreement. He says government leaders must work harder to create stability. And finally, the rebel Sudan People's Liberation Movement North is denying accusations made by the Sudan government that the group forcibly recruited some 900 children from South Kordofan State, where rebels have been fighting government troops since June 2011. The Sudanese National Council for Children accuses the SPLM North of forcing children in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile to join the military group. SPLM North says the Sudan government forces have recruited more than 3,000 underage children in South Kordofan. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Sudan Mujahja by Gordon Kong. We've been listening to Gordon Kong with the song Sudan Mujahja. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yalna made in Bainanarabuna.